sister's a therapist and I tell jokes. We both want to help all kinds of folks.
Hello, and welcome to My Sister's a Therapist. My name is Virginia Jones, and I'm a stand-up comedian, but my sister is a therapist.
Hello, I'm Laura Ryan. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and my sister, Virginia, is a stand-up comedian.
You know, after our first guest episode with Michelle Bowles, people have been asking, when are you going to have another guest on? And that time is now.
It's happening right now.
Our guest this week is Evelyn Vieira. She is the Cycle Breaker Coach. She is a certified trauma support specialist, parent coach, and positive discipline educator. And she specializes in family dysfunction, toxic relationships, and narcissistic abuse and recovery. Welcome, Evelyn.
Thank you so much, you guys. I'm so happy to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Evelyn, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and the work you do and our topic today?
Sure. Yeah. So I work with parents who grew up with a narcissistic parent who don't want to pass on their codependency crap to their kids. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I help parents deal with their baggage so their kids don't have to, is kind of my little tagline. But really the work that I do and the reason I'm doing this is because when I became a stepmom before I became a biological mom, and it was just like a big dumpster fire, and everything went horribly wrong. And I was like, I don't even want to do this. I met my husband. He was amazing, but he had two little girls. And I just used all of the parenting tools that I grew up with, which was manipulative, controlling, demeaning, critical. And it really just didn't go so well. And so I started reading parenting books and going to parenting workshops. I learned new tools. And then that just kind of like spun me into this whole new place where now I do what I do and work with people trying to break those generational cycles. I am a trauma-informed coach. And so, you know, I have that background in training. And so I really help people really dive into how narcissistic parents dismantle us from the inside out. And then I help them address that abandonment trauma, because that abandonment trauma shows up in our parenting in a lot of sneaky ways. And it wasn't until I started healing myself on those deeper levels that really my parenting and everything else really transformed. And
I would also say it's not even just being a parent. It's also just being a person. Like in my experience, learning this very dysfunctional way of living really affects all your relationships.
Absolutely. It does.
That's an incredible origin story. Laura and I had a stepmother who did have her own biological child, but she wasn't good at it.
She was a non-parent to her child.
But thinking about somebody like yourself who has no parenting experience and just gets dropped in the middle, like that sounds like a worst case scenario. But to your credit, you identified the problem and tried to figure it out.
For sure. And the crappy thing about the whole situation was I had worked as a nanny and a preschool teacher and all of that for like 15 years. So I had all of this childcare experience. Yeah. And I was like, I got this. I'm good.
I mean, yeah, I was an amazing aunt. You can't even believe what an incredible aunt I was. Sure. And I remember, listen to this. I was teaching a parenting class with zero kids, but I spent a lot of time with my niece and nephew. Sometimes I have them for the whole weekend.
I've read books, you guys.
So many books. But it's interesting how the 24/7, 365 grind is actually quite different.
And when they come out of you, when they are a part of like your, you know, everything,
your DNA.
Yeah, your DNA. It is a very different experience. And, you know, for me, I think a lot of like my trauma was so repressed, you know, suppressed from just years and years. I had always attracted toxic relationships and I couldn't figure out why. And it wasn't until I started doing this work that I realized, oh, I grew up in that. I didn't know any different. I'm just, you know, perpetuating this toxic cycle. What I found is that, and I see this with my clients too, is that we have so much trauma that just gets pushed down. And then when we have our kids and they have their own opinions, you know, and I,
yes,
yeah, it's just like, oh my gosh, where did this come from? So the triggers and all of that, it's just information that you might have unhealed trauma.
You know, Laura has been having an experience this week that has led her to suspect that her child might not be exactly the same person as she is.
He's in fact quite different from me, and we're really struggling about it.
We are on the struggle bus. Well, Evelyn, welcome to the show. And Laura, what is our topic this week?
Well, I was inspired by Evelyn's narcissistic legacy chart, which you can get at cyclebreakerparenting.com. And in the chart, she goes through each thing. Like if your narcissistic parent was these qualities, then you might be
suffering from intergenerational trauma.
You might find yourself like this. So I'm just going to read. I'm going to start off by reading through some of this, see if there's any bells going off, Virginia. Okay, so I think maybe some listeners would find, I'm just going to pick some randos. If your narcissistic parent was unpredictable, they were unstable, you never knew how they would react, you might have learned to control your emotions and your behavior to meet your need for safety. Does that sound like anything? No. And if you have a kid, you might try to control them. I've done it. I failed a lot. Feeling responsible for controlling their emotions and behavior.
Yeah, Laura and I have talked about this a lot. Growing up in an unpredictable household, I just try to have no feelings whenever I can. Just really keep them tamped down. And Laura finds that aggravating.
I do. These are all, I'm just going to focus on dad. We're going to stick with dad. If your dad, if your dad was critical of you and disregarded your feelings and focused on what you were doing wrong, you might criticize yourself and having negative self-talk.
Laura had a total meltdown working with her kid on multiplication tables because she was trained to believe she could never learn them.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. We had a, yeah, I actually just did, and I just got a new certification in NET, neuroemotional technique. And I found like,
congratulations, by the way.
That's thank exciting. You very much. It is finally done. But I found that the training itself was very traumatic for me because when we were doing, you basically had to take, I had to take an SAT test, like, you know, bubbling in something. I had a lot of trauma around that. And I also had a lot of trauma about having to take in information and memorize it. And I had all this stuff coming up around times tables and multiplication. Coincidentally, my son is also in the fourth grade now. So what's he doing? He's learning his times tables. So I'm trying so hard to teach him in a non-traumatic way.
Yes. Well, this is an opportunity, Laura, right? This is an opportunity for growth. And that's,
we call it a growth edge.
So Evelyn, what is your advice for a parent in that situation? Like, how can Laura move past this trauma?
Oh, that is, I get that a lot. I experience this on a daily basis with my own kids because sometimes my inner child gets really pissed off that I'm giving to my children today what I never got as a child. So my inner kid's just like, what the hell? Like, this sucks. Like, what about me? So there's this term that my sister-in-law taught me that she calls it dual parenting. And it's kind of this idea or concept that you go ahead and take care of your inner child. You allow your emotions and all of your feelings around it to come to your awareness and you just process, okay, and you just validate. Because those feelings are valid. Whatever those feelings are, they're valid. And we cannot heal it till we feel it. As cliche as that is, it's true. And so feeling it, you know, taking a break from your kid if you need to, go in the other room, cry, scream, do whatever you need to do, but just acknowledging it is powerful because we did not get that in dysfunctional homes. We never got that in a dysfunctional upbringing. So validating it is powerful. And then recognizing what your child needs and doing your best to give it to them. And also being okay with, you know what? I can't give it to them right now. And I need to take care of me. And that is okay. I think the difference between, you know, going down the dysfunctional path and doing it in a healthy way is coming back to it. If you're not going to come back to it and just pretend like everything's good, that's dysfunctional. And that's what we often learn.
It's really dismissive and horrible to your kids.
It is, exactly.
That's what I've learned.
And it's not like, hey, buddy, you're on your own to learn this. It's not like that. It's just more,
just figure it out, bud. You can do this.
Yeah, when you're 18. No, it's not that at all. It's just more like, hey, this is triggering for me. And, you know, I'll be back in 5 minutes and we can work on it again.
Evelyn, speaking of your inner child being jealous, my dad loved little kids. He loved a baby. And once you were walking, talking, having your own opinions, he was kind of done.
He abandoned you.
Right. So he had a girlfriend who had a grandson and he was kind of helping with caregiving.
They were the grandson was living with my dad and his girlfriend.
And it's great that he was able to offer that. But he would tell me these stories about walking this kid to school and feeling the little hand in his big hand and feeling, you know, the spring sun on his face and he can smell the peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the little kid's brown paper bag. And it just stank because I was in a position of having to be jealous of a six-year-old.
Right. So my response was, hey, your feelings are real and they're valid. And also, at least some kid got something out of that man. You know, obviously that kid's dad wasn't around. So he needed support.
Right. I get that that's the correct adult, non-traumatized response. But, you know, eventually that kid got older and dad abandoned him just like the rest of us.
It's a wonderful pattern. Right. I remember speaking to our father at one point and saying, "Dad, you don't like kids. Like, you don't like, why'd you have five?" And he said, "Oh, well, you guys were just so cute when you were babies." Yeah, dude, why don't you just go volunteer to hold babies at a hospital? Right. Why'd you have to bring life into this world? Okay, so yeah, so on Evelyn's paperwork, you said, when we have been groomed to abandon ourselves in order to gain love and approval, we end up teaching our children to do the very same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they call a cycle.
Well, that's what they call intergenerational trauma, which is our topic for today.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So have you guys heard of epigenetics?
Is it an EpiPen that also has genetics?
Yes.
I love that answer.
That's an amazing answer. It's not accurate, but it is very good. Epigenetics is trauma information that is passed from one generation to the next through their DNA.
Mm.
So I remember learning about this in school, and I'm going to talk about it now. There's an article in the Washington Post by Mary Kim, and she's talking about this study that happened. A newborn mouse pup, seemingly innocent to the workings of the world, may actually harbor generations worth of information passed down by its ancestors. In this experiment, researchers taught male mice to fear the smell of cherry blossoms by associating the scent with mild foot shocks. 2 weeks later, they bred with females. The resulting pups were raised to adulthood, having never been exposed to the smell themselves. Yet, when the critters caught a whiff of it for the first time, they suddenly became anxious and fearful. They were even born with more cherry blossom detecting neurons in their noses and more brain space devoted to cherry blossom smelling. The memory transmission extended out another generation when these male mice bred, and similar results were found.
So the mice were like, "I don't know why, but this smell makes my feet hurt, and I want to get away from it."
So, Evelyn, what do you make of the mouse study? Because what I remember, I didn't see this written, but what I remember is that this thing affected all the way down to the great, great grandchildren of the original participants.
Well, what I'm taking away is that mice will never go to Japan for the cherry blossom festival.
No, mice
never will
ever. No, they're not going to get on a plane. They're not doing this. This is it.
That festival will be a mouseless situation.
That is a wild study. That just blows my mind, that the way in which they, like, their bodies completely evolved to be alarmed by this scent. I mean, that is just so wild to me.
When I was doing NET as the client, I was entering into a new relationship, and we came to the conclusion that I was feeling frightfully overjoyed, which you see here. And I was like, what is frightfully overjoyed? And basically what the conclusion we came to is that when I was thinking about this new relationship, there was excitement, but there was also a lot of fear, right? Because being connected to people is scary in my experience.
Right, because you're vulnerable.
I know that's your thing. That's not my thing. My thing is just knowing that the sense that they will let me down, right? There's a lot of excitement about the new relationship, and it's coupled with terror.
What I'm hearing is that the anxiety and fear you were experiencing in a new relationship was not necessarily directly because of trauma, but it was caused by being happy in a new relationship.
Because of my experiences growing up in the family that I grew up in, connection and feeling seen and all that stuff, it also connected to terror. There was also the sense of loss, because our mom actually did leave, and also our dad left. He technically still lived with us, but he left us.
Right. Like, the DMV had that address as his place of residence, but none of his shoes were there.
Would you equate that, or say that that is a sign of abandonment trauma, of someone having abandonment trauma?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like, I mean, it's part of an anxious attachment, which happens when you have inconsistent parents, right? When your parents are inconsistent, you basically have two choices. You can either really cling to them and try to, you know, connect to them and make them love you more, or you can just give up altogether. I chose option A. Virginia chose option B.
Interesting. Do you think that these two paths, and I've been so curious to ask you guys this actually, do you think that these two paths that you guys are on, one of being a therapist, one being a comedian, that stems from maybe any kind of roles or anything that you played in your childhood home?
What do you 100%. Think? And right. I think it also plays into the different groups that we belong to. So she's the first child. So I think, you know, that's part of, she wants to be the center of attention. She wants everyone to see her. And then I'm the middle child who's completely ignored. I've just taken my cookies and left. I've left the convo. But I think when I was a kid, my role in the family was to make sure everyone was okay. And of course, I've built my whole career on that.
Right. I feel like you also put a lot of energy into peacekeeping and negotiating. My job in the family was to amuse my father who had major depressive disorder. So that's how we got here.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's how we've arrived.
Fascinating.
You know, Virginia has broken the cycle by choosing not to have kids. And I think that that was a good choice.
Mm-hmm. And that is always an option. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's more and more of an option now. It does make me sad that for my parents' generation and even my generation, a lot of people would have kids because they thought they needed to, or it was the time to do it, or their friends were doing it, or their parents wanted them to do it. And so you had a lot of people having kids who were not equipped to do it and didn't particularly want to. But then they, you know, gave rise to kids who need coaching from Evelyn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And a therapist like Laura. And a comedian like Virginia, because
they need all of us. Purdue University News had an article called "Epigenetics Offer Puzzling Twists and Turns." Evelyn, have you ever heard the term hunger winter?
Hunger winter? I have not, Laura. Can you please fill me in?
I'm going to fill you in. In 1944, people in the Netherlands entered into what would become known as the hunger winter, or hunger winter, a famine created in retribution by the Nazis for resistance activities in the German-occupied nation near the end of World War II. The Dutch famine, as the incident is also known, caused the deaths of as many as 22,000 people. But because the famine had begun so quickly with the Nazi blockade of food in November 1944 and ended just as suddenly with the liberation of the Netherlands in 1945, it gave scientists a very unique window into the effects of how genes in the body can be affected or effectively changed by turning off or on in response to a variety of factors in the environment. So here's some interesting things that happened. Women who were pregnant during the hunger winter were struggling for their lives, right? And researchers found that the famine had turned off certain genes in their children, and the genes were silent throughout their lives. The effects were dramatic. Children born during this period developed cardiovascular disease, obesity, and schizophrenia at higher levels than the general population. In general, they lived lives that were much shorter than people born in the Netherlands outside of that period, passing away at an average of 68 years of age. So, wow. Virginia, what do you make of that?
Wow.
Well, I know we've talked before about how the body keeps a score, but to see it make that profound an impact on a whole generation, that's bananas.
That is absolutely wild. And I just think about all of those kids who ended up growing up being maybe schizophrenic or something and thinking, what is wrong with me? When they were predisposed and had no idea. They didn't have any idea of, you know, why they're struggling in this way.
Why is everyone schizophrenic? This is also a good way to make parents extra paranoid, because even before your baby was born, you're messing them up in utero. So I'm going to tell one final story about epigenetics. But I guess the reason I'm bringing these things up is I want to elucidate that there are so many things that affect generation upon a generation, right? There's so many things that affect even the way that I think about the world. And if I have a personality disorder on top of that, it's just going to make parenting so great. Okay, Holocaust survivors and their children, a search for positive effect. In 1996, Bauer studied 80 Jewish adults born to Holocaust survivors and 20 Jewish adults whose parents had not faced Nazi persecution. All subjects were of comparable age and all had reported experience of some type of trauma during their life. At some point over their lifetime, 29% of the offspring of Holocaust survivors had experienced symptoms of depression, PTSD, as opposed to 0% of the control group.
But aren't they getting some of that from their parents?
Yes. They talk about how it's twofold. Part of it is their genetics. But I remember this deep dive that I've gone into came from, I heard a woman who was interviewed. She was the great granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. So she wasn't raised by this woman and she still had a lot of the same genetic stuff going on.
That's fascinating.
Okay. So the findings suggest that the child or children of Holocaust survivors may be at a higher risk for psychiatric symptoms including depression, anxiety, and PTSD through exposure to their traumatized parents. But I also think having traumatized parents like ours did affect the way that we were raised. Garland, 1993, also did a study and commented that work has shown that the children of parents who have carried within them, however silently, the experience of a destroyed world, have much to contend with growing up, making normal separation and individuation difficult. Moore, 1990, found a higher frequency of separation anxiety and guilt in children of survivors. My family's experience with separation anxiety supports Moore's findings. So, Evelyn, what do you think about that?
That is a lot to unpack. I don't even know where to start with that one. Gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think when we're talking about this generational curse, as I call it, you know, however somebody shows up as a parent, when they have their own trauma, they're not going to be able to connect with their children or to be as patient with their children if all of this internal, you know, stuff is going on inside of them, you know. And so one of the things that I talk with my clients constantly about is, you know, trauma impacts us on so many different levels, and it impacts our mind a lot. So like the negative self-talk, beating ourselves up, all of that stuff, it is a generational thing. So our thoughts, the thoughts we have today, are not really ours. They were passed on from past generations. And so if I think I'm a horrible person and my child does a horrible thing, I am going to be projecting onto my child and scolding them and making them feel really bad and being really critical and not really being able to see past the behavior. Right. And then that child grows up thinking, I'm a horrible kid, I'm a horrible person, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of the way that I see it. It sounds like it's both, though, this generational stuff. It's nurture and nature, right? Mm-hmm. The combination.
Yeah. Virginia, have you ever heard of ACEs scores? Have you ever heard of the ACEs questionnaire?
My understanding is that the ACEs questionnaire determines the amount of trauma someone has gone through in childhood. And I know someone named Laura Ryan who is oddly proud of having a very high score, stoked on it almost.
What is your score? Laura, would you share with us?
Yeah. It's a 7, which is very high. Very
high.
It
is very high. Out of 10.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that Virginia's is also a 7 because she grew up in the same house. Let's go through the questions, shall we?
Let's do it. I am very familiar with the ACEs score as well. Mine is 4.
Evelyn,
so I'm
Four. Why don't you know what you're here?
I'm not as cool as you guys.
Why? Literally, why are you here? If you want to look it up, it's called Adverse Childhood Experience Questionnaire. I go through this with all of my people that I meet with in my office. Most people are at least 5 or 6. I have had in my career, I had one person who was a 1.
Wow.
She had some stuff that happened outside of her family, but in her family, this is birth to 18. Okay. So here are the questions.
Let's do it.
We may have to bleep some of these. When you were growing up during the first 18 years of life, did a parent or other adult in the household often swear at you, insult you, put you down or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt?
Okay, that's yes for me.
So I just have to say something here too. So the ACEs score, one thing that I've done some research a little bit on this as far as like neglect. So like I never felt threatened,
right?
But I felt ignored. Right.
Right. So, which in many cases is significantly worse.
I don't know. I wish that they would redo the ACEs score for emotional and psychological damage and trauma, because it can be just as devastating. And
you have to think about the origin. ACEs came from a pediatrician. So she was just trying to test kids to see, you know, what was going on at home who were presenting with physical problems.
All right. So Laura and I both have a 1. What's the next question?
Did a parent or other adult in the household often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So this is the one I'm not sure if this is a yes for you. This is the one I wasn't sure about. Okay. It is true for me. Did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you or have you touch their body in a sexual way or try to or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal sex with you?
So I'm a yes on this one, but I do want to point out not with a family member. So that's something.
Did you often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special, or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other?
That's a yes for me, dog.
Excellent. And this also happened to us. Did you often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, and had no one to protect you? or your parents were too drunk or high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if you needed it.
What's sad is that our parents were never drunk or high.
I know. They have no excuse. I shouldn't say they have no excuse. They have incredible trauma.
Yeah. So do you think that they were just too preoccupied with themselves at the time to really...
A lot of this stuff is like post...
Yeah, post-divorce. So our mother was removed from the situation.
Right.
And our father just wasn't present. So I don't know if he had a plan that he didn't follow through with. More likely, he had no plan and didn't care.
We sort of took care of ourselves. Hence, had nothing to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, and had no one to protect us.
Mm.
Were your parents ever separated or divorced? Also, yes.
Yeah. Surprisingly, as your sibling who grew up with you, my answer is also yes. Now, Laura, I just feel like it's really easy to focus on the negative parts of childhood neglect. Like, you know, we did have to feed ourselves, figure out how to drop off checks to the city of Dallas so our utilities were not turned off, et cetera. But we got to watch anything on television we wanted to.
That was really good for us also.
Definitely. That was the upside to the neglect.
That didn't create more trauma for me. All the vision things I was exposed to visually. Yeah, that's okay. That was great. Was your mother or stepmother often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her, or sometimes or often kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard, or ever repeatedly hit over at least a few minutes or threatened with a gun or knife?
Finally, a no for me.
That was a no for me, yeah.
That's intense.
Yes, it is. And a lot of people that work with me are yes to that, to all. Okay, this is another one we didn't say yes to. Did you? You have to limit it to the ones we didn't say yes to.
I have a lot of gratitude for the ones that I did not say yes to.
Did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or who used street drugs? No, we did not.
No. Nope, I didn't either.
Evelyn, I bet your answer to the next one is going to be yes. Was a household member depressed or mentally ill? Or did a household member ever attempt suicide?
Yes. I mean, not the last one. Mentally,
actually,
yeah.
Our dad did.
He sure did.
Did a household member ever go to prison? Also.
Gore.
Nope, I didn't have that either.
So what I call that is winning, Evelyn. We're winning. The ACEs are common. About 64% of the U.S. reports that they had experiences of at least one type of ACE before age 18. And nearly one in six, which is 17.3%, reported that they had experienced four or more types of ACEs. ACEs can have lasting negative effects on health, well-being, and childhood, and life opportunities like education and jobs, potentially well into adulthood. These experiences can increase the risks of a wide range of chronic diseases and leading causes of death, like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and suicide. Toxic stress from ACEs can negatively affect children's brain development, immune systems, and stress response systems. These changes can affect children's attention, decision-making, and learning. Okay, and here's the final. Children growing up with toxic stress may have difficulty forming healthy and stable relationships. They may also have unstable work histories as adults and can struggle with finances, jobs, and depression throughout their lives. These effects can also be passed on to their own children.
Laura and I have also talked about how when your family of origin is constantly under financial stress, when you're always very concerned with where your next meal is coming from, it actually inhibits your ability to do higher thinking and planning and learning because you are so much in survival mode all the time. And that contributes to, generational poverty.
It makes a lot of sense because if there's a lot of instability in your home, then that's just going to translate to all of your relationships outside of the home. And in adulthood, it seems as though with all of the studying and things that I've done is that we're just trying to somehow repair, you know, our relationships, our family of origin relationships that were broken. Right. So we're attracted to similar types of people because it's familiar. And so if we come from abusive homes, then we're likely going to, you know, that's going to be familiar and it's going to feel normal to us. And so we're just going to keep, you know, staying in that cycle.
Because it's going to be unconscious.
Well, and also if you grow up in this stressful environment where your mom and dad are yelling at each other, you don't have a good model for what a relationship is. You're like, oh, well, this is very normal.
if there's a lot of instability and yelling and screaming, there's a lot of cortisol going through your body, the stress hormone. And so you just learn that, like, that you have to be in constant survival mode. And so healthy relationships are pretty boring a lot of the time to those of us who grew up in dysfunctional homes. There's not crisis and chaos happening every 5 minutes.
Right. And also when you expose a child to that level of cortisol, it is going to mess up their brain and it's going to change the way their brain works.
Absolutely.
So on average, 64% of people in America have an ACE score of 1. Some of the gifts of having a higher ACEs score are greater risk for chronic disease, mental illness, violence, being a victim to violence. those are some fun facts for everybody to know. I looked up, if you have a 7, what can you expect? Pulmonary lung disease increases by 390%.
Holy moly.
Wow.
Hepatitis increases by 240%. Depression, 460%. And attempted suicide, 1,220%. How is Virginia going to make this fun? So let's talk about solving for these issues. Okay. So has anyone ever heard of Murray Bowen?
Yes.
My God, there's not a day goes by that I don't think about him, talk about him. Sometimes I do a dance about him, sculptures. Why do you ask?
So Murray Bowen created the, it's kind of self-absorbed, Bowenian style of family therapy. And so he was a psychiatrist. He discovered an interesting phenomenon. He was working at a mental health institution and he had a lot of schizophrenic patients and they would have like a day pass or like a weekend pass to go home and see their families. And what he found is when they came back from a weekend or a day with their family, all of their symptoms really got a lot worse.
Right. Like being in a toxic family environment is not therapeutic.
Right. And so his theory was that several generations of dysfunction create more dysfunction until he thought that schizophrenia was an adaptation from intergenerational trauma.
Fascinating. Yeah.
It's like that thing where you're at school or, you know, you're working, just living your life and you think you're doing pretty well mentally and you go home for Thanksgiving, you fall right into whatever family role you had before. You're having the same arguments you had as a kid and you leave like full of stuffing, but also traumatized.
Right. You know, he talked about the multi-generational transmission process. So it's the idea of like this stuff is being transmitted. So the combination of parents actively shaping the development of their offspring, offspring innately responding to their parents' moods, attitudes, and actions, and the long dependency period of human offspring results in people developing levels of differentiation of self that are similar to their parents.
So I talk a lot with my clients about enmeshment, right? Because dysfunctional homes have literally no boundaries. There's lots of rules. You have to follow lots of rules, like don't talk and don't trust yourself and, you know, don't feel your feelings. But we tend to just have this enmeshed relationship and with our parents, our family. So if mom and dad are unhappy, that means the children are unhappy. Everyone feels the same thing. Nobody has the ability to differentiate themselves. And so that's extremely damaging when you are raising a child in that environment, because that child learns that they are an extension of you. And so if you're unhappy, they feel the pressure to be unhappy. And then they feel the pressure to fix your problems if you're not dealing with your crap. So I just think it's so incredibly important for parents to know there is hope. Like, this is not just it's a dumpster fire. Good luck. There is hope. And it really is all about awareness. It really is all about noticing your triggers, getting help, reading books, listening to this podcast, going to Virginia's comedy shows for comedy relief, and maybe seeking out Laura as a therapist and me as a coach.
Everything and you'll be okay. So let's talk a little bit about cycle break. I'm going to quote something and then I want you to kind of respond. There is an article in Psychology Today by Sarah Epstein, LMFT, called "What is a Cycle Breaker?" While the word may be new, the concept is not. It is rooted in systemic thinking championed by psychological professionals, particularly marriage and family therapists. Shout out to myself.
Oh, yeah.
Woohoo. And the nod to the idea that our traits, behaviors, and beliefs are influenced by generations of family members before us who have reinforced a certain way of being. Instead of seeing our growth as a highly individual process, cycle breaking acknowledges the role of context, culture, history, trauma, and resilience in families.
Mm, That is beautiful. I love that. And that, I mean, that leads right into, I call myself the cycle breaker coach for a reason. And it is because, like, walking through my own pain and trauma, I have figured out tools to help myself heal and break the cycle that I am really passionate about teaching other people how to do that. And so I have a program I take people through. I'm writing a book on this topic, and everything I do is all about cycle breaking. And it really is having that awareness to know what you're breaking, because it can be so intimidating. Like, okay, break this cycle. Good luck. It's like,
everything you grew up with, everything you've always known, just stop it.
Right. And it doesn't work to do the opposite of what your parents do, because that's just another kind of trauma, right? Like, don't do the opposite. Don't go to the other extreme. And so, but there are certain things that healthy families do that dysfunctional families cannot do. They are incapable of doing. And so I've narrowed it down to 5 things. I call it the Cycle Breaker Blueprint. And it's just a 5-part acronym. And it's BRAVE, because we have to be brave in order to face this generational trauma. So I'll just quickly, if it's okay, just tell you what the 5 things are.
Yeah, let's do it.
You have to get really good at boundaries. Boundaries have to exist if you want to break this generational cycle. Boundaries between you and your children, between all of your family. The boundaries, reciprocity. We oftentimes have no idea what reciprocity is. And that is when there's balanced reciprocity, where there's give and take, not just one person takes and one person gives. So having reciprocity in your relationships, the A is accountability, and making sure that people that you're close with, that you are able to hold them accountable. Someone who refuses to be accountable and responsible for their actions, that's a huge red flag that they might be a cluster B. I listened to your guys' cluster B episode. It was amazing. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it, people. The V is validation, you know, making sure that we're doing the internal validating for ourselves and not seeking that external people-pleasing piece. And then learning how to validate our own children in a healthy way. And then E is emotional safety. And so understanding what that even means, and making sure that we are taking these 5 things and creating a legacy for ourselves, a new cycle breaker legacy for ourselves and our children to move forward. So
amazing.
So it seems like in Bowen's model for healthy family relationships, the best thing you could do is just stop seeing your family, which I'm totally willing to do.
Well, he said it was a willingness to accept that I am a part of a system, right? So he was the first person to really see that it's not just me floating around on this rock by myself. Right. It's me interacting with these systems and dealing with that.
Absolutely.
So when he did family therapy, he literally meant everybody. Like, he would bring in grandparents, great-grandparents, everybody in the room. He would spend like a week with a family in a house, and they would all do therapy together.
Holy moly. Incredible. I wonder if there are any fist fights. That's the first thing I think of.
So it was Maurizio Andolfi, and he developed the multi-generational family therapy model, an experiential model of intervention that centers on creativity and humanity as the best ways to build an alliance and work within a family in crisis. So, Virginia, what are your takeaways? What have you learned here?
Well, for one, I'm super excited about Evelyn's very practical method of cycle breaking. You know, when you come from a family of dysfunction and your grandparents were dysfunctional and probably their great grandparents, it feels inevitable that you will be too. And also, I've learned that mice do not like cherry blossoms. Evelyn, what are your final thoughts on this topic?
I agree with you, Virginia. I can't get over the mouse thing. All I keep thinking about is these mice, and they're just like, I don't like this smell. I don't know why. I think all of this has been really enlightening and powerful, just to understand that we are a part of a system, that all of our issues came from somewhere. They didn't just come out of thin air, and we didn't create them. You know, we're dealing with the ramifications of other people not dealing with their baggage. So now it's an opportunity to deal with our own, so we're not passing that crap on. But ending on a high note, I hope that people take away some hope that it is not just a doomsday thing. There really are tools that you can use to help break this cycle. And it might just be baby steps, and that's okay. Give yourself grace.
And we've talked about in this podcast that in your relationships, you're trying to heal your own trauma. But what a great opportunity in child rearing and in building a family to examine your own and heal your own trauma as well. Well, what are your final thoughts?
So I was working with a couple this week and they don't have kids yet, but they're thinking about it. And I said, you know, my goal as a parent is to be like a C plus to C minus parent, because striving for perfection is a horrible mistake. And what I said to them is, I'm going to do my best and I'm learning as I go. But I have found that becoming a parent was the biggest reckoning for me in terms of like finding out, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff to do and so much work to do. But yeah, I really like Evelyn's tips. I think this is helpful. And also, like, I think we have to take responsibility for what's ours and do our best to try to make changes. And I think obviously doing trauma therapy, going to coaching, getting medicated. There's another score called the resiliency score, which I didn't mention today. And you can look that up too. But basically, it's the things, the qualities that you had in your life that did kind of protect you from some of, you have some resilience and you've learned some things and you did have mentors in your life. Cause like Virginia and I have talked about that. We pulled in other people to help us to cope and deal with life. So Evelyn, if someone wants to reach out to you or check you out, how would they find you? Where are you on the interwebs?
Thank you for asking, Laura. So Cycle Breaker Parenting is my jam. So cyclebreakerparenting.com is my website. You can go there and you can download for free the narcissistic legacy chart that Laura was going over. And that basically just kind of, you know, helps you really easily identify how generational trauma might be getting passed down to your kids. And so you can find me on Facebook. I'm starting a YouTube channel, all with the same handle, Cycle Breaker Parenting. Also for your listeners, I have a special offer for them. I put together the Narcissistic Legacy Breakdown for any listeners who were raised by a narcissist or married a narcissist. I take you through 3 videos. They're short videos, 10 to 15 minutes each. And then there's some printouts for each video. The whole package is usually $37, but I am going to give it to your listeners today for a whopping $6. So,
MSAT exclusive.
I just really want people to understand. And I talk about the Cycle Breaker Blueprint in the last video. And so you can actually get a printout with scripts of how to set boundaries with your kids and your toxic people in your life. So you can grab that for really cheap. The cost of a coffee, basically.
And Virginia, how can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, the cool kids know that my website is www.bedinia.com. And that's also my TikTok and my Instagram. How about yourself?
Oh, you can find me at lauraryan.org. You can also find me on my TikTok account. I almost have 400 followers.
Whoa.
What? Mm-hmm. And that is, I am Laura Ryan.
If you'd like to find out more about the podcast, we have a website at www.mysistersatherapist.com. And that is also our Instagram handle. If you would like to reach us with show ideas or questions or compliments, you can write us at hello@mysistersatherapist.com. You can also reach out to hire us at hireus@mysistersatherapist.com. Laura, do you have a listener review for us this week?
I do. So the listener, the Cycle Breaker Coach, said, hilarious, straight talk, informative and clever. I love this podcast. Virginia and Laura are fun to listen to. They talk about a wide range of topics that somehow always seem to be just right for what I'm in the mood to listen to. They are brutally honest, which I find so refreshing. Highly recommend to anyone wanting a good laugh and food for your mental health. Thank you so much, Cycle Breaker Coach.
Thank you so much for listening today. Please check out Evelyn's website at cyclebreakerparenting.com. And now in the words of Billy Ray Valentine, Capricorn, we'd like to say,
we can make it, baby.
Me and you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.